He's a local farmer, which is a good thing. And he works for the Bath and Wells Diocese, looking at kind of rural affairs and pastoral care of people within the farming community. And many of you will know that the farming community, particularly through COVID, but generally struggles an awful lot with mental health issues and other kinds of needs. So the kind of pastoral care that the diocese can give is important to the rural community. So it's good to have Rob with us, and I'll hand over to him now to share with us. And then, as I say, if you pay careful attention, he may allow us to have dessert afterwards. Thank you, Rob. Let's give him a round of applause as he comes to speak to us.
Thank you, Mike. It is Mike, isn't it? Yeah, that's right. No, it's good to be with you this afternoon. And thank you, Peter, for the, well, I think it's thank you, for the invitation. As Mike said, I'm a farmer. I'm not that local. I'm probably about 25 miles away down in a village called Pitney between Langport and Somerton, which when I say to people, if you ever heard of Pitney, most people have heard the pub there, and that's about it. But I've worked... Well, I'll probably sort of talk through how I happen to be sort of doing things like this nowadays, because ever since I was a young lad, I always wanted to be a farmer. I grew up on a farm, a very small family farm. I was fortunate enough to be able to go on to university, so I did agriculture at university, and I always knew that the farm was too small at home to come back and earn an income, as well as my parents earning an income. So I was going to go off and manage farms, and I was going to become a manager of a big farm estate and learn everything about farm management and how to manage your inputs and everything you did really well to be a really efficient, profitable farmer. And I started off doing that pretty well, I thought. I looked after a dairy farm at a place called Puckle Church. Not too many miles. In fact, I used to drive through here from home up to Puckle Church when I was living up there. It all went really well until about 18 months after I started there. The owner, who lived about 40 miles away, decided he was going to sell the farm. So that wasn't such good news. It was a quite a big dairy farm, and that was a bit of a disappointment for me. But at the same time, I was feeling that a bit of a tug back towards home and working on the home farm, even though I knew that there wasn't enough income on the farm there. So I sort of moved back home and got a job working for an animal health company. And that was great. It was going right. Well, no, it wasn't great. It was horrible, actually. The first 6 months, I don't know if any of you have been in sort of the sales profession in your livelihood, but and we've just been chatting about getting people's trust, and I know Peter and like it wouldn't be that John wouldn't be the same, but to go onto a farm, if you don't know somebody, to turn around and try and sell them something is really hard work. And that first 6 months was really, really challenging, really difficult. But gradually, as we've just been talking about, you win the trust of people, and I found I was getting to know and be really interested in, enjoy conversing with the farming families. And in time, it goes on to be the fact that you're sort of almost welcomed as a really close family friend onto the farm. And sort of the penny dropped that actually a lot of these farming families are not seeing hardly anybody. And they're becoming very isolated in their own communities. They feel a lot of suspicion between themselves and between the rest of the community and society in general. And farming went through a few bad times, even back to, there was sort of Chernobyl, and you know, no one was going to buy lamb because it was all radioactive, and then there was BSE and all the things around that. So I found I was getting more and more interested in the farmers and their families than I was in actually selling anything to them. And the selling almost became incidental. And alongside this, I was trying to keep the farm going at home. With my dad was getting quite a bit old and less active, and I was trying to apply all my university knowledge I'd built up, and how to manage our resources really efficiently. And we built the stock numbers up, and we ran around in circles all the time, and we put too much pressure on the land and the animals and ourselves. Nobody was happy, and I was doing all this alongside as selling animal health stuff. And I realised that two things, really. One, that what I learned at university wasn't necessarily what I could put into practice in my situation on our farm. We're only a small farm, about 90 acres. And I knew something had to change there. And I had the realisation that how I was known and loved by my family, and more importantly, probably by God, wasn't down to how successful the farm was. And so by working harder and harder all the time and earning money on the other job to put into the farm to keep that going and keep as many animals as possible, and keep all the pressure from that, none of us were happy. The land wasn't happy. The land wasn't particularly keen on the idea. The animals weren't particularly happy because we were keeping too many animals on the space, and we were getting health problems from that point of view. And we as a family weren't happy as well. And then gradually I realised actually it's not down to your financial success or how hard you're working. Just, you know, let Jesus carry the burden a bit. And I think when that sort of dawned on me, when I realised that my worth to my family, to God, to the people around me, wasn't measured about my financial success, that really made a difference to my life. And that sort of changed around how I viewed things in general. I was valued and loved for who I was, not about how much money I could produce or whether the farm was a success or not. And that was a really transforming moment in my life. And a few other things happened then at the same time as well. But as this was going on, I was getting all this nudging about interest in farming families rather than selling them anything. And so I would go and visit folks, and we would spend best part of an hour talking about their family and how things were going and what they were doing. And they would all know. I joked with one of them one day, they knew my wife was pregnant before I did. You know, it was sort of, they'd know things so much. And, you know, you go then, oh, she had the baby yet? Oh, have you called it? And all that sort of thing. So I found that the selling was incidental. People would buy stuff. You know, I'd sort of just remember as I was getting back in the car, oh, yeah, we'll buy some such and such. And that was all happening. And I thought, well, no, this isn't quite what I'd be doing. It's something else I could be doing as well. And I got involved with an organisation called, in those days, it was called the Farm Crisis Network, which was still is now. It's a Christian charity that supports farming families in times of need. It's now called the Farming Community Network, still the same initials, FCN. And I went along to one of their meetings and met a few folks. One of them was a vicar, and went home from that. I thought, well, that's quite interesting. And then a couple of weeks later, I got home to an answer phone message from the vicar who'd been there, saying, well, I don't know if you know about this, but there's a job going in the Diocese of Bath and Wells, and they're looking for someone to work with farming communities around Taunton. Taunton's about 15 miles away from where I live. And it was one of those moments. I'm not one of these people who sort of, God spoke to them at 3 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon, then again, you know, 7 o'clock Wednesday night or anything like that. But it was one of those moments when I really thought, well, that's my job. This is the sort of thing that I've been drawn towards. We've experienced difficulties on our farm. I've got that sort of, not trauma, but the difficult times we've been through and helped, learnt how to cope with that sort of thing. I've got an interest in farming families, and also a deep felt passion to connect farmers more with the communities around them and to make links there. And I thought, well, that's my job. That's, you know, God's made that job for me. And I went along to the interview, and I haven't been to many interviews in my life, but I went along to the interview, and I don't mean to be cocky saying this, but I knew I'd get the job. And so I was so relaxed when I went along to the interview, and we chatted away with the people, and so that, yeah, we'll let you know and that sort of thing. But I knew that was the job that God had for me. And I started that in the year 2000, just a few months before Foot and Mouth broke, which was good timing. And at the same time, so it was a big drop in salary. Working for the Church of England isn't the best paid thing in the world, it was half time. At the same time, we were changing things on our farm to to farm in a way that we felt was more in tune with feeling more comfortable in the right place and the way we were doing. So we went organic, and we sold a lot of the livestock on the farm. So we reduced the pressures on the farm, but we knew to survive selling a lot fewer livestock. We were just beef and sheep at that time. We would have to sell them direct to actually get more income and get a better return on each animal that we were doing. So we decided to build a little farm shop and to sell direct and to turn the farm around to sort of be more public facing. And what we did was to sell straight to the public rather than to get totally disillusioned over the years selling to supermarkets and big abattoirs and things like that. And I started to enjoy my farming a lot more because, and I'm not saying organic farming is the way that everybody's got to go. I know most farmers, it's not the right way for them. But for us, it was the right way forward. And it felt to be the right thing to do, that our stewardship of the land that we were privileged enough to be looking after, it felt for us to be the right way to do it and the right way to look after it. And the welfare requirements of organic farming as well are such that your care of the animals and number of animals you keep is quite different as well. And that felt good to us as well. And so sort of 20 years later, sort of God sort of blessed us, and we're still there. We're not pushing Tesco's out the way. We allow Tesco's to trade still. And we have no ambitions for world domination, but we're still here and we're still enjoying our farming and our life there. But the main thing for... Sip of this. This is a very long preamble to say that one of the main thing, I suppose, for being here in this place now is that my passion is for making links in communities and certainly in rural communities, which is all I know really. Because farmers are misunderstood, and this was brought home to me by a story I heard once about another sales rep went onto a farm. And he was chatting to the farm, it's quite a long time ago, because it's when he used to have pigs in the farmyard and that sort of thing. And he was chatting to the farmer in the farmyard, and he looked over and he noticed a pig with just three legs. And he said to the farmer, "What? You know, you're rearing some good animals here. Why has that pig only got three legs? What happened there?" And the farmer said, "Oh, that pig," he said, "he's amazing. He's an amazing pig." He said, 2 weeks ago, we'd lit a bonfire up outside in the back field, and he said a spark came over and went onto the thatched roof and started burning the farmhouse roof. And he said, "I didn't know what to do. I shouted and I hollered." And he said, "The pig," he said, "he came out, he jumped out of the pen, went to a water trough, got a bucket of water, went up a ladder, chucked the water on the roof." And he said, "Before you knew it, before the fire brigade could come, he'd put out the fire." Absolutely amazing pig. And the chap said, "Well, that's an incredible thing, but you still haven't explained why he's only got three legs." And the farmer said, "Oh, he's an amazing pig, that Mike. Amazing pig." He said, "Just last week," he said, my little son was playing in the farmyard. We had a pile of sand there. We were doing some building work, and he was playing with the sand. And I'd just come through the gateway with a tractor. And he said, "I stopped to go and shut the gate," and said, "I hadn't put the handbrake on the tractor properly." And he said, "All of a sudden, the tractor started moving forward, and it was heading towards my son by the sand." And he said, "I shouted and I hollered. I couldn't get there. I didn't know what to do." And he said, "The pig jumped out of the pen again." He said, "Ran to the tractor, jumped up into the tractor and steered it away from my son at the last moment. Saved my son's life." He said, "I owe so much to that pig." And the chap said, "Well, that's another amazing, amazing story, but still doesn't explain why the pig's got three legs." And the farmer said to him, he said, "Well, look, if a pig's that good, you can't eat it all at once." So, and that's a sort of illustration of how farmers are misunderstood. by a lot of our community. I know we don't do ourselves a lot of favours sometimes, and a wet spring like we've had, lots of farmers have been sort of designing top gear skid pans on the roads of Somerset and everywhere else. You know, it's been quite a challenge. So we don't always do ourselves a lot of favour, but most of the farmers I know are very faithful, hardworking people. They're conscious that they're working with creation. They're conscious that most of what they do is, that the end fruits of what they produce and that, a lot of their profitability is out of their hand. Three of the most important things that affect their income and their return would be the weather, government policy, and we haven't got time to go into all that one, and world prices, none of which they've got any control of. So you only have a control over a limited part, if you like, of your business. So there's a philosophical approach to what they do. But I think living and working on their own, or in small numbers quite often, builds that sense of isolation and confusion and suspicion quite often in society around you. And so I've been fortunate over the years in working for the church to be able to organise events whereby we've taken, for example, lots of school children onto a farm to learn about how a type of food is produced. And you know, it might be a dairy farm. We've done a number on dairy farms, and they've gone around the farm. They've seen all aspects of it, and we've had all the different milk products sort of produced so they can taste them all and that sort of thing, or potatoes. And you know, we've done different ones like that. But it's wonderful to see, because we always use farmers as the guides. So each class of school children are taken around by a farmer or a couple of farmers. And it's lovely to see the farmers develop their confidence as they're actually sharing what they're doing with the children and being able to share their expertise and experience with the children, to see that altar there. And because farms are such fascinating places. And, you know, we heard a lot in COVID, didn't we, about the frustrations of, well, not the frustrations, but the importance of getting out into the environment. I mean, looking out today, I mean, what could be better than walking around the Somerset countryside today? And there's a lot of green prescribing nowadays, isn't there, with doctors saying for folks getting onto getting out into gardens more, getting into land, you know, doing things like that. And I believe we all have this sense in us that, you know, saying the Bible, you know, we come from the soil. Adam, you know, means the dust, the soil, doesn't it? And, you know, we all have this direct connection with the soil. And where progress in society has sort of taken us further and further and further away from the soil, from creation, from the environment around us, I think as humanity we're losing something in that respect. And so any opportunity we can get to reconnect more directly with our food, more directly with the countryside and the land around us, and directly with those people working day in, day out with the countryside, I think are really, really beneficial. And so another thing with my work with the diocese is that I encourage churches to sort of, you know, get out of the building wherever possible, and to use, I mean, in the Anglican Church, there's some sort of seasonal agricultural services. There's a plough service in January, which some places are, where you ask God's blessing on the work on the farms in the year ahead. There are rogation services this time of year when you go round and pray for blessing on the farms, on the gardens, on everything's happening outside. There's Lammas celebrating the first fruits of the harvest, the Feast of the Unleavened Bread that the Israelites used to celebrate, the very first barley harvest. And offering the first to God, not just at the harvest festival when all's safely done and gathered in, and we can say thank you to God, then we've got it in, thanks very much. Lammas is thanking God for the very first bit that we've got to harvest, and we've got something to harvest and to celebrate that. And you can do great things with that, in the bread making afternoon, and then share fellowship with the bread in the evening and things like that. But harvest festivals are brilliant things you know, if you, I don't know, treading on any toes here, but I don't know how you celebrate your harvest festival, but if you can, go and see a local farmer and get onto the farm and celebrate it there and see and talk to the farmer about, you know, what harvest means to them, how they feel at the beginning of harvest or when it's leading up to harvest, how they feel at the end of harvest, what, you know, their sort of sense of emotions from that respect there. But I firmly believe the more that we connect with God through connecting with his wonderful creation around us. And the more opportunities we take to do that, I think it makes us stronger people, and it draws us closer to him. Certainly has for me anyway. Sorry, I've probably talked too long. That's all right. Has anybody got any questions about looking after sheep or anything like that? Or anything in that respect? Anything to do with farming or ways in which you can connect with farming community?
When
yep.
you were talking to the farmers and that, and you didn't say, oh, well, took me order. The man who, whoever it was, employed you, how did you get on with it?
Well, that was a strange thing. I mean, the farmer would remind me that he wanted something, rather than me sort of having a plan that, oh, I had to go and sell. No, and I think, again, it was God's hand, it, because the job was really difficult to start off with. But as I find, as I became more interested in the people, rather than having a plan in my head that I had to sell them this, that, and the other, then things just developed from there. But it was what I forgot to say, was driving up a farm track to talk to a farmer that you'd never met before, and doing that for a number of years was, I think, God's preparation for what I did later on in meeting farmers for the farming families for the first time and trying to make connections with them and the rest of society, and also if it was to do with the farming community network, if there was times of trouble that they were in, you know, to be able to relate to them. It took away the fear of going to an unknown place and meeting someone for the first time. So looking back, I'm pretty sure it was God's preparation for what I was going to do later. But,
I mean, my son used to go around the farm selling, but he didn't like going to new farms. Although he would build it up in a farm with a farmer, he didn't like going to new farms because
no.
they've already got their sales.
Mm. Yeah, because what you were selling them was potentially depriving someone else of business. But I tried not to think of it like that. Yeah, but I mean, it helps being a farmer myself, because you could relate to what, you know. I mean, if I saw a chap in the middle of carving a cow, I wouldn't try and sell him some dairy chemicals or anything like that. I mean, there's one farmer I went to. I went and helped the chap when he was carving, and it was a bit of a mess of me trousers and jacket. But you know, you know how to relate to them more. And I think, and I think this farmers, most farmers are so focused on what they're doing. I know you could say expect lots of other professions, but because farming's been really tough over the years for many people, there's not the sort of spare capacity for lots of other social engagement. And so a number of farmers don't find it that easy to relate to the general public and to other people and that. So I think as Christians and in our churches, we can be catalysts to help and build up some of those relationships. And you know, I know some places like during Foot and Mouth and other difficult times where sort of churches have literally sort of, someone's dropped off, you know, a cake now and again and that sort of thing. And a gesture like that to someone who loves cake, but to someone like that speaks a tremendous amount, because it's just, you know, just a simple message. Actually, we care about you. You know, we care about what you're doing, what you're going through. And a lot of farmers, you know, don't feel valued or cared for in what they're doing.
My experience, farmers are pretty stubborn.
A bit stubborn.
Stubborn lot.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
All right.
How have you been able to share your faith with
I know that, I think they're stubborn. I think when they, to be perfectly honest with you, I think foot and mouth actually did a lot of good for rural church, because farmers felt so isolated and so on their own then that in a number of parts of the country, the rural church really stepped up in loving and caring for them. And that sort of opened up quite a bit from the farming. So I'll be perfectly honest with you, I've never encountered sort of hostility towards me when I've either talked about my faith or talked about a sort of a church connection and that. And the Farming Community Network is a Christian organisation, but it's not out there to convert every farmer. It works with anything. Or anything like that. I mean, it works with farmers, whether they're Christians or not, or any belief or not. But I think farmers are quite surprised that someone's caring for them and as a concern for them, without a sort of a hook to it, in a sense. And I think in rural communities, and again, as Bobby was saying earlier, when you win trust, and people, farmers don't have that wider a social circle. So when you've earned their trust and they know the motivation behind what you're doing, then I've just only found them to be accepting, to be quite honest. Because I think every farmer has got... I don't think you can be a farmer without having this sense of awe about creation and everything that we're working with. And, you know... I love speaking about the passage in Mark 4 when it says about the seed. You know, the farmer plants a seed, and night or day, whether he sleeps or not, the seed grows. He does not know how. And, you know, it's gardeners, you know, those of us who, well, not gardener, but those of you who garden, you know that the wonder of, you know, you've planted that little seed, and yet within a few weeks, you've got this amazing, amazing plant. And, yeah, I just think there's a bit in all of us that is aware of the awesomeness of what we're working with and living in. And sometimes it needs somebody else just to give us a little nudge or two along that road to processing it in our own minds. So,
Rob, could you give us just a couple of kind of areas we could pray into? Because, you know, obviously, you know, you've mentioned a lot. Any specific areas at the moment we could pray into regarding farmers that you're dealing with?
Yeah, I mean, this. So with the Farming Community Network, there's two main areas of, the two areas that we get most calls about and most cases are social isolation, mental health issues. So pray for farmers who feel isolated and who are struggling with mental health issues. Well, actually, there's the other two. One of financial. There's a lot of fear at the moment because, without talking for 2 hours about changes in payment systems and that, but there's a massive shift around how farmers are going to be supported in the way they farm. And certainly in Somerset and in the southwest, a lot of smaller family farms are really going to struggle with that. And another really big issue, sadly, is issues to do with succession and family breakdowns. And again, that is sometimes back to the lack of contact people have with outside circles, but farms can be very, it's a bit like in a cauldron sometimes, you know, it's a very sort of small circle of people. So. Mm. Sorry, I've given you more than 2 hours, haven't I?
That's fine. Well, I'm going to ask John to pray for Rob and for his work, but also maybe you'll be able to pray as a farmer into those things for us. John, please. Thank you.
Father, I thank you for Rob. I thank you for the talk he's given, and maybe it's given an insight into... farming, and thank you for the way he talked about farming a community network, and I thank you for that organisation and the work it does among farmers, particularly those who are struggling, and what Rob said about feeling isolated, and there's so much we can't control. We can't control the weather. Rob said that, and we can't control government policy, and so farmers can feel a bit neglected. And I pray for Rob, especially as he meets farmers, as he talks to them, as he gains their trust, and I pray that you would bless him enormously in the work he does. Father, I thank you for the talk he's given, and may your hand be upon him for the work you've given him to do. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Now, the most important question, Rob, have they deserved their desserts? There you go. Yeah. If you want to get out alive, you better say yes. Right, fine. Okay, so thank you, Rob. Give him a round of applause and have a chat with him before he goes. And any moment now, the shutters will rise and we'll find out what's for dessert. Will there be a roulade this week? I mean, who knows? Thank you again, Rob.